are there going to be consequences? Are these characters going to be around?
Yeah, who knows?
Or are they going to go back to the Dark Universe?
Yeah.
Cool action figures.
Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is episode number 120, tentatively called Stranger Asgardian Things. I don't know. Just trying to come up with weird names for things. All right, so this week we are obviously talking about Stranger Things Season 2. We're going to talk about Thor Ragnarok.
Who are
and
you?
And then I'm Brian.
Yeah.
Who are you?
I'm Johnny.
Yeah. If you're new here, this is the Infamous Podcast. We like to talk about movies, comics, pop culture, that kind of fun stuff. Like and subscribe on iTunes or anywhere you you have a podcasting app. I'm trying to think of what those were called there for a second. Like, wait, what are these?
I didn't know where
called?
You were going.
It's a radio show. You know, we're on anchor.fm, all sorts of fun stuff. We have a Patreon page if you want access early. We give all of our Patreon backers access to the show a few days early, so that's cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
All of our backer.
Nice.
Thanks, Daryl. Anyway, but yeah, so let's just hop right in.
Sure.
So, news bites for this week. There's some couple interesting things, a big shocking thing, and then one just kind of like, oh, okay, cool. But starting with a interesting thing. Disney versus the LA Times. So we were talking about this right before we went on air. So on September 24th, the LA Times wrote an article about Disneyland asking, is Disney paying its fair share in Anaheim? And they went on to talk about like the billions of dollars that Disney isn't paying for what's happening, like, you know, around them, for taxes, for, you know, providing jobs that they'd say they'd provide, that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
Now, Disney came back and said, and there's a link to the initial article in the show notes. It's well worth the read. It's really interesting. And then you can do your own research to see Disney's response. But Disney came back and said they'd been working with the LA Times, talking about, you know, refuting things from the article. They worked with the reporters. They worked with the editors. They even worked with the publisher. And then the LA Times went ahead and posted this. This piece is so bad that the Orange County Register, which is the neighboring paper, called it a hit piece, which, you know, is kind of like, you know, a YouTube term, or like, you know, like it's all of a sudden some sort of rap battle. But coming out of this, Disney has said the LA Times critics are no longer welcome at screenings. So then the LA, Boston, New York, and I think maybe Chicago critics groups all got together and said, well, then you're not going to be eligible for awards
like what?
Like the New York Film Association's best film of the year, you know.
Oh,
best
who
comedy.
Cares?
So like, you know,
who cares?
Like, yeah,
who cares?
I mean, some people do. I don't think Disney does.
I was gonna say,
sure,
most of your regular consuming public does not.
Yeah, they care about the Oscars, maybe the Golden Globes.
Nobody even really cares what critics say anymore.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Siskel and Ebert are dead.
And even they were, you know, contentious at times. But
they were more, you know, fair and trustworthy.
They were, absolutely.
They were what you call journalists, mm-hmm. not these tabloid YouTube internet journalists that we have now. They were actually real journalists.
I mean, we review things.
Yeah.
But we always try and look at the positive of everything.
But
we
took
just
journalism
hate
classes.
We
too.
Both, yeah, I have a degree in journalism.
Yeah, you have a degree, and I took journalism for 2 years.
But,
I took video and print journalism.
Yeah.
I literally can watch these, like, people that are coming out now, and even people that are our age and a little older.
Right.
They are not journalists.
No.
They're
bloggers.
Not. They're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just
citizen journalists is
they're,
what the term
they're
is.
What
if you want to
call
it nice.
Reality stars,
rabble rousers.
They're reality stars.
Yeah.
They literally want their name out there, and it's like, you know, I'm the type of person where I don't care about Twitter that much,
right.
And it's like, you don't have to go read my Twitter feed. You don't have to go look at my Instagram. You don't have to go do any of that. If you choose to, you choose to enjoy.
It's cool, and there's links to it in our show notes.
Yeah, but, exactly. You know, but the thing is everybody wants you to do that now.
Right.
That's not the way that journalism should work.
I agree. And you know, part of it is like you have these things like BuzzFeed and Huffington Post and,
right.
you know, Forbes now, where the authors are paid based on the number of clicks they generate or number of views they generate.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And so right there, that takes out any objectivity because then you get things like Comic Book Resources where it's like the 15 things that went wrong with Captain Marvel's shoe, you know, and they write these ridiculous just
I stopped following
listicles.
Them.
Yeah.
I literally stopped following
That's
them.
One. Yeah. Like Newsarama, that I still
Bleeding
check
Cool
in on
is starting
them.
To go that way, too.
Bleeding Cool has been just more indignant lately than usual.
Yeah.
I think the whole thing that happened with like Barstool Sports with ESPN,
right?
Like Bleeding Cool's like, you know what? Let's just be jerks again.
Yeah, well.
And whatever. But in this instance, though, I want to understand where these critics get off. Because
they think they're
owed something.
But and, everybody's a critic now.
But Disney doesn't owe them
the
opportunity. Like, we're going to talk about Thor later on in this episode, right? You paid to go see it.
Yeah.
Or Elva or whoever.
Yeah.
I paid to go see it twice for, you know, three other people, not just including myself, you know, or plus myself. You know, it's one of those things where I knew we were going to talk about it. I probably could have tracked down like one of the pre-screening, you know, showings, but it's probably going to be 3D. It's probably going to be in a theater that I don't really want to go to.
Right.
I'd rather go to what's my home theater now because you don't like the Regal anymore. But, you know, but I also, I opted not to see it in RPX this time.
Well, the funny thing is
I
seen it in a theater with almost similar chairs and they were more comfortable.
Well, those are the Cobb ones are way more comfortable. Yeah. They're bigger. They have more cushion.
Yeah.
The reclining mechanism.
Shout out to Cobb Luxury Cinemas.
Shout out to Casey.
Yeah. Shout out to Casey.
Wait, did Casey pay for your ticket?
Casey
did you pay
paid
him back?
For the tickets, and he said I didn't have to pay him back, aww. So I got to see it for free.
Nice. Did he put his popcorn on his lap?
No. No, and the armrest stayed down, too.
Aw, he didn't cuddle?
Did you know there's an armrest? That,
yeah.
I didn't know the armrest lifted up.
Yeah, you make a little love seat out of it.
That's totally cool.
Aw.
But, yeah.
Yeah, but these people, like, whatever, I don't know what... I don't live in Anaheim, so I'm not worried about that. I'm more worried about this reaction.
It's the idea of, and you see it a lot with, and no offense to people in the early 20s, late teens. I work with people that age. They think that they deserve something and they haven't earned it. Critics don't.
I agree.
They don't deserve what they get.
Yeah.
Because it's like you're getting to see a movie for free and you can tear it apart or you could make it really nice. But don't get an attitude when Disney says, you know what? We're not going to help you.
Yeah. And what about, and so, you know, these critics associations saying, well, you're not going to be included in our awards. How would that's like,
boo-hoo!
I'm going to take my ball.
You know what happens?
I'm going to take Disney, my pen and paper and go home.
Disney owns ABC. So you won't be on ABC. Yeah. If you had a show that was airing on ABC and you're a critic, guess what? Now your show's not airing on ABC. Guess what? Now you're not invited to anything that Disney is putting out either because you stepped in the poop.
Hey, sorry, LA Times. You're not included in D23 anymore. You're not included in Star Wars
Celebration.
Well,
it's just one of those things
where
because Disneyland is its own segment of the company, if their people refuted what was said and have legitimate proof that it's untrue what they put in this article, then LA Times looks like a bunch of jackasses.
And now I'm not taking a side there. Right?
I know. Well, no,
we don't
either.
Live in Anaheim. We're in Cincinnati, and you haven't. Like I've been to Disneyland, four or five times now.
Right.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's just plopped in the middle of Anaheim.
My thing is, and I haven't read the article. Yeah. My thing is, if they're complaining about Disney not bringing in money, let's look at all the hotels, all the restaurants, everything around there that employ people that they wouldn't be there if Disney wasn't there.
Right. Like there was a thing here about like one of the parking garages that was built, and once the city recoups like close to like $1 billion, then ownership reverts back to Disney. So yeah, they own the parking garage and all the parking revenue that goes with it. But I don't understand why they're acting like this is the first time a company has made a deal like that. You want to talk about a crappy deal that a company has made with a city? Look at Cincinnati with the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
They have, there's this gigantic stadium and it's a beautiful stadium.
That only gets used part of the year.
And if they want to use it any other time of the year, the Brown family gets part of the gate. They get all of the concessions.
Yeah, see,
and then the city has to rent it out. They get parking. It's just one of these things that the taxpayers are footing the bill for.
Right.
Taxpayers did not foot the bill to build Disneyland.
Right.
But they give, like, but the city government gives them tax breaks because they employ so many people.
Uh-huh. And you're going to,
this
gonna...
new mayor of Anaheim is like, oh, well, I've got my panties in a twist.
And that's the thing is you're going to bite the hand that feeds you, and Star Wars Land opens in a year and a half.
Yeah.
And it's going to bring in more people.
Right.
I mean, how many people go to D23?
A lot now. Yeah. I mean, it's like a second
It's like a San Diego Comic-Con, yeah.
You know, what,
and all,
what,
like, all what Disney has to say is, we're not having D23 in California anymore. We'll have it down in Orlando.
Yeah.
Orlando is very much more welcoming to the Disney company. I mean, Star Wars Celebration is partially footed by Disney now, so, you know. I mean, Reed Pop puts it on, but Disney's got their hands in that.
Well, I mean, Reed Pop is the management company that does it. But anyway, it's just one of these things where...
don't bite the hand that's feeding, like, a good segment of your city.
Well, I don't even care about that. It's LA Times. It's like, what kind of... Like, if you have someone who's trying to work with you, right?
Yeah.
And say, we didn't do that. Like, this isn't right.
This is what we do do.
And you go and...
Do-do-do-do-do.
Anyway, and you go... Did you watch Gallivant?
No.
Okay, never mind.
But still...
Anyway, but there's a whole thing with do-do-do-do-do. Anyway, but for them to, like, turn around and say, hey, we're going to, like, publish this anyway...
Mm-hmm.
If there's evidence one way or the other, you have to be unbiased.
Mm-hmm.
And at no point in this article does it say this is an op-ed. They state facts and things like that. The one
facts
of the,
with quotes around them.
No, I'm not saying this is fake news.
Well, it's not fake news, but it's just one of those things where it's like, maybe you should have put April 1st on the date the byline date.
Well, here's the thing though is. Is Disney paying its fair share in Anaheim? The money battle outside the happiest place on earth is the article by someone named Daniel Miller. Now, you can write this article the way you wrote it, but then go back, but also include in that article, this is Disney's counterpoint to each one of these arguments. That's a fair and well-researched story. This is the kind of stuff that pisses me off.
Well, and that's what I'm saying is if Disney, you know, what, the Orange County Register, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Is the other paper?
Right.
If Disney publishes an article through Orange County, refuting all this, they're going to look like a bunch of jackasses. Yeah. If there's real proof that the stuff they're saying is not factual, then, you know, they're not legitimate journalism.
Yeah, it's just...
And that's not a legitimate paper at that point. That is a tabloid.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, you know, if you're publishing either untrue or semi-untrue facts, you have become a rag.
Yep. And you get, like, you know, let's talk about, like as a... comparison.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we have Rotten Tomatoes.
Sure.
Now, people are confused about what Rotten Tomatoes is, and I'm not going to necessarily get into that.
It's a rating page.
It's an aggregator that takes the ratings and says this is a positive or this is a negative.
Right, but it takes reviews from all over.
They don't write the reviews. Right. Like you can't just be on Rotten Tomatoes, right? Like there's the fan side of things.
Right, yeah.
But like, you and I, we review movies from time to time. We're not on Rotten Tomatoes.
No.
And we shouldn't be.
Right.
You know? I write for sciencefiction.com from time to time.
Right.
The Ben and Dave, who are the movie reviewers, are there. They're both on Rotten Tomatoes. And deservedly so.
Right.
Because they both write well-thought-out, well-positioned reviews of why they do, what they like about a movie and what they don't like a movie. And, you know, maybe what they could have done to make it better.
You mean they use the who, what, when, where, why?
What? So, now I don't always agree with them, but you know, but it's all
that's
subjective.
The thing is, you know, it's an objective piece. It is an op-ed.
This is a very objective piece with a very big
But it doesn't say that it is.
It doesn't. It, right. No, there's an agenda here.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, it's just, ugh. But then they're trying to say, well, they have these Disney-backed candidates and candidates who oppose Disney. And it's like, if you oppose Disney...
Oh, are you talking like the politics?
Yeah.
Part of
well,
it?
There's the politics in it, too.
Well, yeah.
And if you're a politician and you oppose Disney and you're trying to be in Anaheim, maybe you should, like, you probably should go somewhere else and yeah. be a politician.
Right.
Now, again, we don't live in Anaheim. We don't know everything about this. And the main thing here to take away is the fact that the critics are being babies and they're taking their pens and papers and saying, we're going home. We're going to write in the dark.
All right. Go ahead.
So, yeah, LA Times. Sorry. You don't get like, you know, LA Times, any critic in the New York Critic Association or Chicago or Boston or wherever that's saying we're not going to review. We're not going to include your movies in our award ceremonies.
Sure.
Great. Guess who doesn't come to get to see Star Wars Land
right,
or
yeah.
Star Wars Galaxy yeah. when it opens?
Yeah.
You know, plain and simple.
Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Yeah, exactly.
You kind of screwed yourself on that one.
All right. I'm going to climb down off my soapbox now.
Sure.
but it's interesting. Definitely read it. It's in the link to the articles in the show notes. Send us an email. Let us know what you guys think about the, about it after you read it.
Sure.
All right. All right, the next news bite is the Orville got picked up for season 2.
Okay.
It's kind of exciting. The show has gotten better every week.
All right.
This past week's episode, I was like, oh, it's the robot, and it was Penny Johnson-Gerald.
Okay.
Penny Gerald.
Right?
The doctor. And she has two sons all of a sudden, which I didn't remember her having two kids from the beginning. But anyway, she has two sons.
We didn't know Picard had her brother until the first season. So,
but they were, and you know, they're like brothers. They're little kids. They fight.
Yeah.
And she's taking them to essentially Disneyland.
Okay.
But it's the Pleasure Planet or Fun Planet or whatever.
Like Risa.
Exactly. Well, except for kids.
Okay.
I mean, you take kids.
You imagine that on Risa there was a section that was Disneyland.
Well, you take kids to Risa, but that's just to sell them to other aliens.
There you go.
So,
great. Hey, the dark side of Star Trek.
They got to make money somehow, and you don't see kids running. You know, they're on a 5-year mission.
Yeah.
There's guys and girls. What happens to all those babies? But no, I am excited for this because it's gotten better. And here's one thing I want to see in season 2, more than anything else, is a new bridge.
Oh, like spend some money?
The exterior of the ship looks so nice. They do such a good job on the special effects and things like that. But the bridge is it just takes me out of it. It's like, what is this?
Couple chairs here. It's like a couch there.
but this last one, though, it was a
couple throw pillows.
Brian Thompson was on, and Brandon Braga directed the episode. And it's like, all right, so we see who the Star Trek people are backing.
Yeah.
So, all right, and then moving on to the last bit, Brian.
Oh, the Star Trek. Were you inferring the Discovery thing is not a?
Yeah.
Did you see their sick bay? The picture, like most recent picture, like showed a picture of sick bay, and I'm like, is this supposed to be taking place the same time as, or around the same time as?
Just after Enterprise.
Christopher Pike's Enterprises. Then I'm like,
is it super futuristic?
Did you see the sick bay on the Enterprise in 1964 or 5?
It looked a lot like this desk.
Yeah, right. And like, you know, he's doing the physical where he's pushing the blocks up into the wall. And I'm like, and then you see the Discovery's sick bay and it looks like one that Dr. Crusher would like be like salivating over.
Yeah.
And that, and I'm like, when is this taking place in the 23rd century?
Yeah. I don't know why they didn't just like say, hey, this is the 28th century. This is like, because then they can have those like non-warp fungus things that get them around space.
Yeah, I heard about those too. And I'm like, what?
All right. Well, it's coming up on its season hiatus.
Well, it's kind of like the first season of Voyager where they had the biomimetic gel packs that were supposed to like, you know, help control the ship. And then they disappeared.
Well, they got damaged.
Well, right. But, they disappeared.
But they couldn't fix them.
Right.
Because there was no dry dock.
Right.
All right. Now, let's talk about the last bit of big news. If you're a comic book fan.
Yeah.
And if you are, you've definitely read something this guy has written. Brian Michael Bendis.
I've read a few things.
Just quite a few. Anyway, he's left Marvel. And when I saw he left Marvel, I was like, oh, crap, is he going to Image? No. He signed an exclusive deal with DC Comics.
Why would you think he went to Image, first of all?
You know, I just was...
Do you think he was going to go back? Because
he hasn't done anything like Powers in a while. It's all been like Guardians or like introducing like Ruri Sims or what's her name?
Ruri?
Yeah, from Iron Man.
Yeah.
You know, Miles. Like, he's done a good job like introducing...
Ironheart and...
Ironheart, yeah. Thank you. Introducing new characters and everything. And it's like, well, maybe he wants to go do his own stuff for a while. But I tell you what...
Because he hasn't in a long time, and his own stuff was... I mean, even Powers...
Yeah.
You know, but I'm talking like Torso and, you know, some of the early stuff, Goldfish and that were really like, you know, epic reads.
Right.
And that, and that's, you know, that's kind of my first exposure to Bendis was Torso.
Yeah.
And
I mean, for me, it was Powers.
That would be a great movie.
Which they ruined with the PlayStation Network version of that show.
Powers?
Yeah. Okay, but so here's DC's tweet when they announced it through Twitter today, earlier this morning. We are beyond thrilled to welcome Brian Michael Bendis exclusively to the DC family with this multi-year, multifaceted deal. I'll get back to that in a second. He's one of the premier writers in the industry, having created so many unforgettable stories wherever he's been, and we can't wait to see what he has planned for the DC universe. This leads me to believe he's going to have a stronger voice in TV.
Okay.
I think Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, all that stuff, it's faltering this year.
Okay.
It's like, it's not that it's not good, or it's not that it's bad.
Right.
It's just not good. You know, it's like, eh.
So you're saying that they need a JetBlue.
I think that's what they need. I also think, though, they need that guiding voice back in comics.
Right.
Since Jeff Johns is off doing whatever, trying
movies.
To be Kevin Feige.
Yeah.
And there's Scott Snyder.
I think Jeff Johns is more trying to be Richard Donner.
Yeah.
Than Kevin Feige.
Yeah, I agree.
Which totally makes sense because that's the...
They both worked for Donner anyway.
Yeah.
But I don't think Scott Snyder is the guy to carry the flag across all characters.
So Bendis writes a lot of stuff, but they've never said he's more than just a writer. Like, he kind of seemed like he's like... like a chief writer.
Yeah.
And like then the other writers just like report to whoever their editors are, but their editors report to Bendis.
Right.
Like, he's not an editor at all. He's just a writer, but you know.
He would be like Pablo Hidalgo is with Star Wars, right?
Right.
He's the head of the story group.
Right.
You know, like, if you guys want to do this, you have to run it up this particular ladder.
Right. I'd be curious to see what happens with DC at this point then. Because I don't know how Metal's doing. I mean...
I know sales for the first month were really good.
Yeah, but I haven't heard anything major.
I think the tie-ins are doing, like, the one-shots
are
doing really
good. They're more talking about Doomsday
but,
Clock than they are Metal.
Well...
At this point, and it's like, well...
But part of that is Jeff Johns is talking about Doomsday
Metal
Clock.
Not,
and,
well, no, there's advertisements now.
Well,
where it's like,
okay.
You know, you're like, okay, now the advertisements are starting. That thing, what, starts in December?
December? I thought it was January, but it might be December.
Well, the January date's on it, but it's December the month.
Okay.
And that's the way they work with the comic books.
Rory Williams.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. You said that.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure, you just forgot Ironheart.
Yeah, I forgot Ironheart.
Right.
Which, she's a cool character.
But, I mean, do you think he'll create new characters? Do you think he'll start jumping into old characters? You know, do you think, like, he's going to write a book right off the bat? Or do you think he's going to TV?
Like, I honestly,
are you hoping that he goes to TV?
I'm hoping that he goes to TV, honestly. But I want him to write comics, too, because I love, like, his run on Guardians for the last 4 or 5 years has been amazing.
But he's done at this point.
He's done. Yeah, he's been done with since
this
last one. But
he knew this was coming.
Right.
So, you know.
But, like, you know, his run on Iron Man was good.
Right.
You know, obviously, Miles Morales, Spider-Man.
Well, I was going to say, if you can put anything on Bendis, it's that he created a new universe, the ultimate universe.
Yeah.
I mean, he was pretty much like the major creator of that. And I mean, you know, that was a big deal.
Right. Right.
Not as big of a deal now, but it's like, you know, will this re-energize DC, you know, will it give them ideas of doing things a little differently?
I hope so. And I want to see him on something like The Question.
Yeah.
When it comes to characters. I'd like to see him taking a stab at even something like the Swamp Thing universe.
Right. But with, you enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a team book.
Yeah.
And at, how would you feel if he wrote Justice League?
That's a tough one. I don't think Justice League has been a good book for about 10 years.
Right.
So I would like to see what he can bring to it, but I would go into it with a certain amount of hesitation.
Right.
That's...
And you know, do you think he'll headhunt people from Marvel?
I don't... well, maybe not for exclusivity.
But just people that come over and...
I think he'll get some cool... There'll be some better crossover than we've had in a while. And this is good for Marvel, too, because Marvel can find... Because Bendis has written, you know, 6 to 8 books at a time for a long time.
Yeah.
And you know, his quality, he doesn't really suffer. You know, he doesn't... I mean, he's...
I've never heard anybody say anything negative about a Bendis book, you know.
And he doesn't seem to stick on books for too long.
Six-issue trade paperback thing.
Right.
That seems to be an issue that I think DC and Marvel should be looking at anyways, is those trade paperback, you know, binding type stories.
Yeah.
Because the six-issue thing is gets old after a while.
Yeah. Going back to 4.
2, 4, 6 to me,
whatever makes sense
to me,
story.
It depends on, you know, and this is where the I call out the editors. Look at how good your story is. If it needs to be 6 issues, do 6 issues. Some of those stories don't need to be 6 issues,
right?
They can be 4 issues or they could be 2 issues.
You don't have to drag it out.
You don't have to drag it out.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing with miniseries. It's like, does every miniseries have to be 6 to 10 issues? No. Secret Empire could have been
four.
They could have been a 4 or 5 issue story.
Civil War could have been 4.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about 2? Civil War 2?
Yeah, Civil War 2. What was the one with Battle World?
That was Secret Empire.
No, Secret Empire just happened.
Or no, not Secret Empire. Secret Wars.
Secret Wars.
Yeah. Sorry, there's too many secrets.
Anyway, that one could have... You know,
but even like Metal,
because they pushed that one out to 10 after the 6th one, and it could have ended at 6.
Right. But I mean, even like Metal and that, it's like, you know, do you have to do all the crossovers? Do you need to do all that? And it's like,
DC
no.
does that way worse than Marvel.
Well, yeah, they do. But I mean, you know, Marvel just stretches their books out, and then you don't know when one miniseries ends and the next one begins.
It's like reading a Geoff Johns storyline. You don't know when the last one ended because it just kind of turns into something else.
Well, no, you knew when the last issue of Green Lantern was a Geoff Johns wrote because he actually had an ending. Yeah. And it's
but I'm
like,
saying,
you know,
like,
but
when it went from Rebirth to Sinestro Corps War to Darkest
just
Night
one big
to
story.
Brightest Day,
yeah.
It's like, wait, did you actually end this other thing?
Yeah.
Because, like, you know,
yeah,
it
like
didn't always feel like
it. It's always one of those things where it's like, you know, there is a breath where he takes a breath in there, and there's, like, the issue that's the, you know, la-la-la-la issue, and then it goes back to all hell breaking loose, and it's like, you always got that with Geoff Johns' books, but it's like, it's too much.
Yeah.
It's too much. I don't want to spend all my money on stuff. So, like, I've cut back my comic books.
I've cut way back.
So much that I'm like, you know, Metal, I bought a couple of the single issue stories because I was curious to see what a Flash Batman was and what a Green Lantern Batman was. And that, but I'm like, trade paperback on this stuff.
I sat there and leafed through it to see if it was worth, like, really.
I enjoyed the Flash, the Scarlet one, the Scarlet. Whatever he is, I enjoyed the idea of why he did it and how he did it, but I'm like, you know, in the end of the day, it's like, you know, cool.
Yeah.
But it's like, are there going to be consequences? Are these characters going to be around?
Yeah, who knows?
Or are they going to go back to the Dark Universe?
Yeah.
Cool action figures.
I would, definitely. I would like to see Bendis doing some Elseworld stuff. Like, maybe giving his take on Superman's origin.
If they would do Elseworlds,
but
you know, they've put Elseworlds way back on the back burners.
All right. Anyway, it's exciting news. Brian Bendis, welcome to DC.
Yeah, sure.
I have high expectations and high hopes, and I think you can do it. All right. Stranger Things Season 2.
Yeah?
Let's talk about it.
Okay.
God, that was awful. No, I'm kidding.
I was waiting for that.
So
this one sucked almost as much as the first season sucked.
The first, I've come up with the perfect analogy for the first season of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
It was like every Bengals team in the 1990s, they would go 0-14 and then win the last two games.
Okay.
And then all the fans were like, we got it next year. We got the Super Bowl. You know, like they left with like hope, you know, like I did not care for the first six episodes of Stranger Things season one. Episode 7
you're one
and
of the
8,
few,
I really like.
One of the few.
Anyway, and I am, and I know when I'm in a minority, and like I have my reasons for it, and you can go back and listen to the Stranger Things episode for that. This season now, I told you I wasn't going to watch it all at once.
And he'll put that in the show notes.
True. I told you I wasn't going to watch it all at once, and I didn't, and I'm glad I didn't. I watched two episodes at a time until the ninth episode, which I watched on its own the next day.
So you watched it over a period of
it took
4 days?
A week. Yeah. So... my favorite episode was episode 7.
Right.
Which is the 11th
the
origin
X-Men
story.
Episode.
Yeah, I liked how you called it that. Episode. Where I've seen a lot of people hated that episode. And I can kind of get it.
I didn't have a hate or a like for that episode. I was just like, get back to the story. I understand why they did it, but I'm like,
It should have happened over two episodes.
Well,
if
you're going to tease... Number 8? Was that what she was?
Number 8, yeah.
Number 8. If you're going to tease her at the beginning, then you should have been showing that tease throughout.
Done like what Mindhunter did.
Yeah. Like literally the beginning of each episode could have been a little segment with number 8, and then we would have got to 11 finding 8.
Or like Family Matters did with Urkel, because he didn't show up until like the 11th episode.
Yeah.
And because people liked him so much, they
what
went back.
The thing with the Family Matters thing?
They went back and they cut together they cut together these little vignettes that they then put on the reruns that weren't in the original
good Lord.
TV release. Anyway, I'm kidding. But I'm not. I mean, that's true. I'm not kidding.
I know.
I tell you what, though. I liked this cast. Winona Ryder did not annoy me nearly as much as she did in the first
season. Winona Ryder in this, I think that she might actually, that was a thing that a lot of people criticized. And I think that between her and the Duffer brothers, I think that like they realized that, and she's more the concerned mom instead of the insane white trash mom.
Yeah.
And it's like,
I mean, she was still smoking the entire time.
Well, yeah, but, you know, the thing was, is this mom, compared to the first season mom, was not losing her mind even when, you know, and this we're going to spoil it a little bit.
Wait, how far behind are you on The Gifted?
All the way behind.
Okay, never mind.
But like when he flips and is bad, she's still not like losing it totally. She's more like fighting for him.
Right, and she's trying to protect him, which was great.
And it's like you see that in the first season, but it's more she's off the wall.
She's unwilling to ask for help in the first one.
So that's
she doesn't know what's going on. And I was going to bring him up.
Yeah.
So Sean Astin, I didn't know what to expect. I thought he was going to be a bad guy.
Like he was like a mole or something.
And they set you up for that many, many times.
Like you think that he might be. Yeah.
Like he's working for the
the government.
Or I was thinking he was working for the Upside Down.
Oh, okay.
The Shadow.
They set it up more like it looks like he's working for Paul Reiser.
Yeah. Well, there was that. That looked like that. Yeah. But he wasn't. He was just this sweet guy who was, for whatever reason, in love with Joyce.
Yeah.
And
probably since high school.
Well, yeah, because he was like always talking about. I love that he worked at Radio Shack.
Yeah.
When she was trying to hook the camera up to the TV, the way he explained it just made made me laugh. I just feel like this season the adults were much more balanced.
Yeah.
And the kids showed growth based on what they saw last year to this year.
Even the teenagers seemed a little bit more together.
Right. Yeah, what was his name?
Who?
The one with the bat.
Steve. Yeah.
Steve was great this season.
Yeah.
Steve the first season.
Steve
was
had seen some bad stuff.
Yeah. Steve in season one was like, ugh. Well, what was it? You sent me that thing, or you tagged me in that thing on Instagram, where it was
the babysitter
like art, but it was Steve.
Yeah,
and then Dustin was up in the corner.
He's reflected in the glasses, and it's just a take of the baby two Netflix shows.
The babysitter
that we reviewed. where it had a reflection of the boy in her glasses, they took Steve and did it in the same color and everything.
Right.
And it was just hilarious looking.
You know, I liked the dynamic.
He became
more
likable.
Yeah.
But you still like were like, you're an ass.
You were such a jerk last year. I'm not.
It's like you're still a jerk.
Like I'm not rooting for you to die, but no. I'm not rooting for you to die kind of a thing.
I was just like, you know, they developed the character like, you know, you would think any of your 80s movie punks.
Yeah.
Like Johnny. It's like, I'm curious with the Karate Kid TV series that they're doing or
all
whatever.
The YouTube series.
Yeah, where it's like Johnny and Ralph Macchio's character.
Billy Zabka.
Yeah, but I'm curious to see if like it'll be he evolved over the years. And
do you think Daniel is going to come back and start bullying him again?
No. That's what I'm curious to see where they're going with that. But that's what I would think, like, you know, if we would have got Johnny further in that Karate Kid
movie. Yeah, in the third movie.
Yeah, he would have shown up in the third movie and been helping Daniel.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's what you got with Steve.
I would have loved that, for him to be training Daniel.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been
really
cool.
Or him and Daniel training with Mr. Miyagi.
Right. But because he was an actual, like, black belt in karate,
right.
And Daniel was
yeah.
whatever he was, lucky.
lucky.
So, no,
Hey, maybe I'll beat Johnny. Maybe I won't. It's Rocky. It's just Rocky with kids.
I did. I liked the arcs the kids went through.
Yeah.
Like, they were a year older. They were a year more grown up. Mike is my favorite character.
Okay.
The way he pined over Eleven was really interesting, because he was trying to find her.
Yeah.
It wasn't just he was like, you know, curled up in a ball like Will's brother over Nancy.
Yeah.
You know, he was like, I don't want to do anything.
We're just friends.
We're just friends. But Mike was actually like actively trying to, you know, contact her.
Yeah.
And like, he knew her powers, so he knew like what he was trying to do. Hopper wouldn't let her, obviously, which was interesting.
She replaced his daughter.
She did, totally.
Yeah.
The scene where he grounds her.
Yeah.
And he goes to try and move the TV, and she's just sitting there like, no.
Yeah.
No. And that was the first time I think he was scared of her.
Probably, yeah.
Because I think he felt like, oh, she's my daughter. Like, she's like my daughter. She's a little girl.
She's just a little girl.
Yeah.
And then she opens full bore.
Yeah.
And shows him what
she
can really do.
Well, she didn't even
do
full bore.
Well,
like, that's the sad
blasting
thing.
Blasting the windows out is going like full bore.
So that was a practical effect that they did.
Yeah.
I didn't watch all of Beyond.
I haven't watched any of
Beyond. I watched
yet.
The first
yeah.
one. But they said they figured out how the windows were going to blow and stuck him in the one spot in the room
where
glass wouldn't
right,
touch
yeah.
him. So it was pretty cool. I think Dustin's characterization was a little off, like falling in love with D'Artagnan and like keeping it secret and hiding it for as long as he did.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like what that kid would have done.
Yeah, I don't know what that was about.
But, yeah, I didn't really get that.
I just think that might have been like acknowledging, you know, and you read into it a little bit, but like obviously his dad's not around.
Right.
So it's like, you know, maybe he was just like, you know, just looking for friendship. And then the whole thing with Max and, you know.
Well, with Max and Lucas.
Yeah. So that, you know, it was just one of those things where he was not feeling like himself.
Lucas's little sister
with
the walkie-talkie was great. You know, they're trying to get help, and she's like, you know, jump in a lake. All right. I want to talk about Billy Hargrove for a second. Max's stepbrother.
Yeah.
So how do you say his name? Darkray? Derek? D-A-C-A.
Oh, I don't know how you spell his name.
So, Derek Montgomery, he's the Red Ranger from
I know,
the Power
I looked
Rangers
it up
because
I was like, this kid looks familiar.
And
but
he's supposedly going to be Nightwing some point in a movie.
Okay.
Which I don't know if I buy that. He was great. Like,
did
you
feel
know,
like there was something going on with him that like wasn't? Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's set. We'll learn more about
right.
that later on, but like, he was, I liked him because like you didn't know what was going on with
right.
him. It was just kind of like, oh, okay. Like, why is he mean to this little girl?
Right.
Why does he hate Lucas?
Right.
Is it racism? Is it, you know,
cause
it seemed like it was more than just being racist.
Right.
You know, where are their parents? Their parents come back. Why is he such a puss?
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, is he going to bang Mike's mom?
Yeah, that was awesome.
So that's season three, man. He's totally banging Mike's mom in season three.
That was
three.
One of those things where I was like, this show's going a totally different route than I've seen it going.
If he would have shown up, the only way that would have been funnier is if he showed up with a pizza with sausage, you know? But now, and I do have to say, like, season seven is, or episode seven was the ninth, you know, episode that was added.
Yeah.
Now, they had to do that to get to the finale. And I don't want to spoil the finale.
No.
Because I think what happens is really cool and you have to see it. But I do think
when Eleven becomes the Phoenix,
I think they had to do that to set up for further seasons because they have to leave Hawkins at some point.
When these kids are older, or
no. I think they did a good job with the time jump, like to stick with their ages.
Yeah.
So I think,
but it was only a year,
right? So by the time they do the next one, they could jump a year or even two.
Yeah.
Because most of these kids are, you know, 14, 15 at this point. So, you know, they're not always going to be freshmen.
Right.
You could jump to the next one. They're seniors. And, you know, the...
Yeah, that might be too far, but, you know.
Or juniors, whatever. But the Dark Forces have been working and, you know, Will's stronghold is broken. Maybe they're trying to get another kid or, you know, something going on. Yeah.
Barb returns as an agent of evil.
Well, and they did the whole Barb thing.
They acknowledged what they had to finish that part of the story because it didn't make sense.
Right.
And now what they've done has made sense and it moved the story up to another.
And Brett Gelman in that role
is
great. I loved him. Paul Reiser.
Always nice to see Paul Reiser.
It's always nice to see Paul Reiser. And he was awesome.
And that's why I love Red Oaks.
Yeah.
Red Oaks is great.
I haven't watched Red Oaks.
Oh, dude. Man, he's in that. And it's, you know, it's an 80s show, too. I mean, it's a comedy. But, you know, Paul Reiser was a face of the 80s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's like for Paul Reiser to be in stuff that ties to the 80s is hilarious.
Did you ever read his book, his first comedy book?
Mm-mm.
It was really funny. I like that.
Just remember watching him on My Two Dads. And
yeah.
After Aliens and all that stuff. And it's like, you know.
It's like, how did you get to be so funny?
Yeah, they make a fun end joke on Red Oaks about his character in Aliens.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, okay, that was cool. But yeah, Sean Astin was fun. Paul Reiser, it was cool because it's like, you know, yeah, you could play the smarmy, slimy guy. But you're like, yeah, he's kind of sympathetic too. Yeah.
So Matthew Modine showing up the way he did, like where it wasn't Matthew Modine, it was just she was showing her what she needed to see was cool.
And the flashbacks, you know, explaining what happened with Eleven's mother.
Yeah.
You know,
well, going like that whole thing, going to meet her mom. We know her name is Jane now, Jane Ives. You know, I thought that was really good. I like the idea that the
upside down
is really just a couple shovelfuls of dirt away.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of cool.
Well, it had bled out.
Yeah.
Out of where it's from. It had bled out and was, you know, pretty much taking a grip on Hawkins.
So.
But I think it was like still funny that nobody else in the town really realizes what's going on.
Yeah. Now.
It's kind of like Lost Boys where it's like.
I told
the grandpa.
Yeah.
The grandpa's like, you know, the problem with this town is all the
vampires. Now, I told you before, like, I would have been perfectly okay if season one was just it, right? It was a one and done.
And it had that conclusion.
What would you feel if this became like an anthology show where we got another, like, season three isn't Mike and Will and Dustin and Eleven and Lucas and Max? But it's another town somewhere else, and then Mike and
somebody
Dustin
would have to
Lucas.
Show up, right?
Yeah, like I think Eleven would obviously be the one,
right?
But then you come back for season four, and these kids have aged 2 years,
right?
Maybe three, and you bring them back in, and then that's how you end it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I don't think
if you were gonna do this and have a real conclusion to it, conclusion would be. What they kind of could have done with Buffy when they graduated high school, that could have been the end of the series.
Right.
And you could do that with this.
Right.
But I don't think the fans would.
Well, season five was the natural end to Buffy.
Right.
and then
but I mean they the got fan greedy. The fans wouldn't agree with, you know, waiting that long.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a story. I mean, a year is fair.
Yeah.
2 years, you're kinda like stretching, you know, what people will wait for.
Yeah.
And if it will stay in the mind's eye.
Yeah.
So
all right, so scale of 1 to 10.
I'd give it an 8.
8?
Yeah.
I'm getting a 7.5.
Yeah, I would watch it all in one day again, like I did, you know, last time.
I would watch season 2 again. I wouldn't season go back
Season 2 is
back
probably more rewatchable. Yeah.
I wouldn't go watch season 1 again.
But yeah.
But
there's always something new, so it's like...
Yeah, you know, there's no reason to rewatch anything anymore.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, you know, about that.
All right. And
I
then,
think I would buy this.
Would you?
I think
did
I
you
would,
buy the first one?
That's what I'm saying. I would buy the seasons. I think this is a show like Game of Thrones where I'm like, I enjoyed it enough that I would own it in case I ever decided to just, you know, cancel stuff.
Did you see the case that it came in? It looked like a VHS tape.
No.
It was really cool.
See,
the
then
DVDs,
I would buy it just for that fun. That's a fun thing. Yeah.
So,
yeah. But yeah, I mean, Game of Thrones... I have HBO now.
Well, the special
now.
Edition, the special features that they put on the DVDs that don't make it to the
to the
app are worth the price of the
Blu-ray.
Well,
and they put the stuff from the app onto the box set. So it's like, and I mean, it's just one of those things where it's like, well, you know, like I said, if it's a thing where, you know, HBO goes away, HBO Now goes away or something, and you don't have access to that. Well, I bought it, so I still have access to it. Westworld's another one where, you know, I would say that Stranger Things, to me, is in the same category as Westworld and Game of Thrones, where it's probably some of the best television that I've watched since Lost.
Sure.
Because Lost was an enjoyable show to me. And it's one of those things where it's hard to find good series anymore, you know, that... Yeah.
Justified for me.
Yeah, Justified was a good series, too. I mean, that's for an episode. We should do that for an episode. Of,
absolutely.
You know.
We got to have David on for that one, though.
Yeah.
All right. So out of 10, you said an 8. I said a 7.5. Yeah. It's definitely worth watching.
Oh, yeah. You know? It's fun.
All right. So then we both saw Thor Ragnarok. He went on Thursday. I went on Friday and Saturday. I'm really happy I went back for that second viewing. Because
I'll see it again next week.
Because when you're watching, like, not in frame, like, there's some cool stuff.
Yeah. Right? You know, well, and you got to pay really attention to, like, music cues and stuff like that.
But I really, really enjoyed this movie.
Yeah.
Now, I thought I went into this one with some pretty high expectations because I thought I was going to enjoy it.
Because the trailer made you.
Well, I stopped watching trailers for it a month and a half, 2 months ago.
Right.
So I hadn't seen a whole lot. But wow. This was a dark movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny. It's a funny movie, don't get me wrong. But, like, some stuff goes down. And, you know, a lot of people get killed and, you know, a lot of things go away. I don't know. How much do we want to spoil this?
Let's not spoil it.
Okay.
The this movie has consequences that, like they said, will ripple into Infinity War. Yeah. And, I mean, you know, Ragnarok, if you know... or you go online and look it up, your Norse mythology, Ragnarok is the end.
Did you say mixology?
Mythology.
I thought you said mixology there for a second. Yeah. Like, did I hear that right?
Mythology. Norse mythology.
It's
you know what Ragnarok
together,
is. I mean, you know, Ragnarok is...
Well, Vikings, they talk about Ragnarok.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, because Ragnarok is supposed to be
the end of
an era.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And with the end of an era of Asgard, it's the beginning of a new era of a new Asgard.
Right.
Now, they've done it in the comic books a few times.
A couple, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, the way they do it in this is really good. I liked Surtur.
Yes.
Did you see who played Surtur?
Clancy Brown.
Yeah.
So, Surtur was great. That opening 10 minutes...
Yeah,
with Thor and Surtur.
Yeah,
is one some of the best action I think they've done in any of the Marvel stuff so far, and two some of the better dialogue. When Thor is hanging and spinning around,
yeah,
like that was like I saw some people online like groaning about that and like rolling their eyes, but that was legitimately funny.
Wait a minute.
I'm coming back around. I felt like I liked the line where he said, "I felt like we were really connecting here."
Yeah.
You know, and then he comes back around and the it continues. Right. And, you know.
Well, and the cool thing was is like, you know, because Thor, Loki grew up in Asgard, they know the history that their father dealt with, or think they know the history. And it's like,
they know the history that Odin decided is the history.
They know who Surtur is. So it's like when he's, hey, Surtur.
Didn't my father kill you half a million years ago?
Dead? It's like, that was cool. I really enjoyed the Doctor Strange part of it.
Well, and especially because we saw that little bit of it at the end of Doctor Strange. Yeah. But then getting the whole view of that.
Right.
I've been falling for a half hour.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it was cool because it's like that brings Doctor Strange into the Avengers universe.
Yep.
Because it's like, you know, besides a few little things that were dropped in Doctor Strange, Thor has, you know, bridged him to that universe.
This world has witches now.
Yeah.
Why are you dressed like a witch?
Exactly.
I did like when Loki kind of went at him and he was like, "You charlatan," and then they were in Norway.
Yep.
You know, it's like, oh, that'll be some fun stuff to play off in Infinity War for sure.
I like the acknowledging of what happened between him and Jane.
Yeah.
Why Natalie Portman wasn't in the movie. So, you know.
I think they're not going to miss Natalie Portman at all.
No. I think that part of that story was done.
I think she made the movie too serious.
Maybe.
I think because of you hear the stories how she's just not a pleasant person on movie sets.
Wow.
Which I don't know for sure. It's, you know, the stories that you hear. I think
because she went through the Star Wars trilogy.
Well, and I get it, but
George Lucas ruined Natalie Portman.
But I don't think she would have worked well with Taika Waititi anyway.
Probably not.
He's much too laid back. And from what I understand, he directed a lot of it in the green screen suit.
Yeah.
Right? You know,
suit. Because he's Korg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably
one of the best characters in the whole movie is Korg.
Yeah. Korg is great.
And it's like, you know, piss off, ghost. The best line in the movie. Piss off, ghost.
Yeah. Oh, okay. New Doug.
Exactly. But it's a fun movie. They did a lot of acknowledging stuff that's happened in the past in the Marvel Universe.
Yep.
With tongue in cheek on some of it. But it's like, you know,
the whole
thing where everybody like was like, how's the Hulk end up in this movie was literally explained perfectly.
You couldn't have gotten it better.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, the thing with Grandmaster and explaining Sekar and all that, it's like, you did a really good job.
I liked the change to Sekar from the comic, you know, kind of making it that garbage planet it's kind of
the
dregs of the universe.
I said to Casey afterwards, I said, well, now we get an explanation of where the Zune showed up.
Oh, yeah.
Where Peter Zune showed up. So it's like, you know, having Junkion in the Marvel Universe.
Yes.
I literally was like, hey, where's Wreck-Car?
I was sitting there humming Dare to Be Stupid. Yeah. I was waiting
for like a motor talking robot motorcycle to show up at some point.
But
I really enjoyed it, and you know, it's one of those things where you know, that's it's a solid 9.
Yeah.
I'd give it a solid 9.
I go 8.5, 9.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm giving things 10s anymore. I don't like it's gonna take something really special to be a 10. Like if I give something a 7, I like it.
If Disney invites us to see the movies, every one of them is a 10.
If they fly us out to Disneyland.
Hey, if you fly me out to Disneyland, everything's 100.
I tell you what, Kate Blanchett was amazing.
Was it cool? Because like I was like, wow, she's really playing like a bad version of Galadriel.
Yeah.
Like that scene in Lord of the Rings where she like is like, the, you know, the dark version
when
of
the
Galadriel.
Dark elf version
like,
of her comes out.
Yes, this is that.
But, well, I think there's part of that.
How about
but,
Carl Urban too, man?
Dude, so Scourge?
Yeah.
So Carl Urban is the opposite of Michael Fassbender, right?
Yeah.
His people pick great roles for him.
Oh, yeah, sure.
If Carl Urban's in a movie, 8 out of 10 times, I'm going to like that movie.
Sure.
So I was excited to see what he did as Scourge. I was excited to see how they used him. Because in the comic, you know, he's Scourge the Executioner.
Sure.
And, you know, they obviously made some changes. Because
they made changes, like,
you know,
on characters
Hela
a lot.
Hela is Odin's daughter, not Loki's.
Right.
Which I would have liked to maybe have seen her being Loki's daughter. Yeah. It would have been interesting.
But for where the story goes.
As the story worked, it worked perfect.
Yeah, it made perfect sense.
Now, is she like? I don't feel like I got an answer to it. Was she a daughter of Freyda?
I don't know. They never said anything.
They didn't
about
say
that.
Who her yeah. mom was.
Right.
So,
and the thing that was cool was like, you know, An Age of Ultron is probably my least favorite Marvel cinematic movie.
Sure.
But the Vision part that he had in there,
yeah,
is pretty much in this movie.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
so I don't understand what Idris really Elba complained about, because he was saying he doesn't want to do superhero movies anymore.
He was really
he
good
had an
this.
Amazing yeah. part. He was awesome.
Is he not doing superhero
I
movies?
Don't think he had said he doesn't want to do it anymore. And you know, they put a bunch of hair on him and they threw some contact lenses
sure,
in him. Like,
yeah.
what makeup did you have to go through?
Maybe they were trying to get him for something else and they don't want to do it.
Maybe, yeah. All right, so Thor's hair.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen people complaining that they cut his hair.
Okay.
Like, Chris Hemsworth didn't want to wear that wig anymore.
I wouldn't either.
I wouldn't either. And Thor has short hair in the comics right now.
Yeah.
It makes, you know, it's
it's just one of those things where it made sense for the story and it was a great scene.
Right.
Yeah, that scene's great.
Best Stan Lee cameo yet.
Yeah, at the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah. No, well.
No, get it?
Oh,
at the
very beginning of the
I literally, when Thor's in the cage at the beginning of the movie, I literally leaned over to Casey and goes, "Hey, there's Stan Lee's cameo." Once you see it, or have you seen it, you totally get it.
They're going to save that for later.
I love that. I was like, "Hey, there's Stan Lee's cameo."
That's funny. But no, this was his best cameo yet.
Oh, this was the... I think this was probably the funniest one he's had.
Well, because the last two have just been like pre-recorded, like,
right.
you know, where it was on a green screen. It could have been in any of the movies.
Right.
This was the most recent one that's been like dedicated. Like,
shot to, in the movie. Yeah.
Because like the Guardians one, Doctor Strange, or Guardians 2, sorry, Doctor Strange, Spider-Man Homecoming, like they could have been in anything.
Right.
This was, you know, part of the movie where in Guardians 1, you know, he's there and, you know, it's. You know, it just worked. It was a good one. But
so I'm curious, like with the stinger, where this is going to go. Obviously, it's going into Avengers Infinity War, but I'm very curious to see where it's going.
So now, did you watch the Comic-Con D23 clip?
No, I didn't get to see that.
So apparently in that clip, because I haven't watched it yet either, but
the Guardian's fine.
David was telling me Thor smacks right into the windshield of the Milano.
Yeah.
So, and they're CGI-ing, you know, the other thing in there. Which there are things that happen in this movie that I'm not going to spoil that the marketing did an excellent job
of
hiding
spoiling.
And not spoiling.
Right.
So, one, Marvel, Disney, Buena Vista, Tyco.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. For not spoiling.
And I'm not spoiling it for you either because there's a couple cool things. But I'll tell you later. I'll tell you.
And
offline.
I'm glad that they convinced Anthony Hopkins to come back.
Yeah,
because he wasn't going to come back.
Yeah, and it was a proper.
Yeah, I think like that was a fair shake to the character.
Yeah,
you know,
I think I like the it took me a while to free myself from your spell.
Yeah,
Freyda would have been proud. That was a nice moment between him and Loki because you know Thor and Odin, neither one of them hold any ill will towards Loki.
Right.
Even though Loki pretended to be a snake and then transformed into a boy and stabbed
Thor
when they
were a kid. Watch for the cameos too. Watch for the cameos.
The play. Watch the play.
The play cameos are great.
I will spoil one thing.
Yeah.
The guy playing Thor in the play is Luke Hemsworth.
Yeah, yeah, I looked it
Most
up.
Most people won't
like,
know that, but
and he had the beard and everything, so it was
right.
like,
and
yeah.
I think he had a nose, too, but he's on Westworld.
Yeah, it's Chris's brother.
And he's Chris's littlest brother.
Yeah.
So
I thought he was the oldest brother.
Oh, is he the oldest?
I think he's the oldest.
Well, maybe I'm saying littlest, like shortest. Like, he's tiny. He's not as big.
I just watched a movie with him on Netflix that Simon Pegg's in.
Oh,
I can't remember the name of it.
I know what you're talking about.
Three Times the Kill or something. Yeah.
Was that good? I haven't watched it yet. It's in my list.
It's a dark comedy.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Because there's another one of him where he, with Simon Pegg, where he gets god powers.
I haven't watched that one
yet.
Yeah,
that's on my list too. Anyway. But no, I enjoyed this. It's solidly in my top five.
Yeah.
For Marvel. And probably bumped out Captain America First Avenger.
Okay. So, as your top five?
Out of the top five.
Okay.
So,
this is probably the only Thor movie that would be in my top five.
The first Thor is in my top 10.
Yeah.
And when I left the theater on Friday, I was like, I, I was debating if I liked it better than Thor.
Yeah, I'd have to look at all those movies and...
We'll do that. Yeah. We'll figure that out. But because I really liked the original Thor.
The original Thor is a good movie.
I like Thor the Dark World, too. Like, I don't think it's as bad as everyone treats
so
it.
So, were you happy with who showed up of the Warbound?
Yes.
And did you like that they kind of replaced the princess with Valkyrie?
Well,
Hulk's flirting with her, continuously.
He is flirting with her. And she's not Valkyrie.
Yeah.
She is
a Valkyrie.
She's a Valkyrie. She's not the Valkyrie. Right. And the Valkyrie is in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, they've confirmed that. And she's actually a character from Hulk 174, Scrapper 4. What did I have here? I actually wrote it down.
She's one of the...
She's Scrapper 142.
Yeah.
Which was a character from Planet Hulk.
Right.
So, but they decided to make her a Valkyrie.
They meshed her. Like, they did a lot of
perfect.
Right.
So all those people are
complaining. That's one of the scenes that's like an epic scene in that movie. The fight with Hela and the Valkyries is like epic.
And all these people are complaining, she's not Valkyrie. She's not Norse. She's not this. She's not that. You're right. She's not the Valkyrie. She is Valkyrie.
She is a Valkyrie.
Tessa Thompson is freaking amazing.
Yeah.
She's beautiful. She's an awesome actress.
I forgot she was in Westworld.
Like, she's the corporate person in Westworld. Right, yeah. You want to go and you want to see a good Tessa Thompson movie, go watch Creed.
Yeah.
Want to see Tessa Thompson when she was younger and crushing it, go watch Veronica Mars.
Oh, was she on there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, she is a fantastic young actress and not young. I mean, she's just a fantastic actress and I can't wait to see how they use her further in the Marvel universe.
Yeah, yeah. I enjoyed
because
her.
Because she can be thoroughly used outside of Thor.
Right.
I know, like, she and Scarlett Johansson and a couple of the other ladies, like, have pitched, like, an all-female super. Do an A-Force movie. Yeah. Put her as the team leader.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
Done and done. All right.
Cool.
So go see Thor. Watch Stranger Things. Go check out the links, everything we talked to. Brian Michael Bendis, welcome to DC. What else? Oh, if you guys like what you hear and you want to help us out a little bit, because we do want to start going to comic book conventions or more comic book conventions that, you know, maybe aren't necessarily a driving distance thing, so we can get some interviews and things like that, check out our Patreon page. We have some cool stuff there. We actually have a store on Threadless now where you can get new merch, the old logo and the new logo, which I'm not going to take the old logo stuff down because I like the old logo, but...
Whatever you want to do.
I like the new logo, too.
Leave them both up.
Anyway. All right.
Let the people make their choices.
Yeah. I'll let you buy what you want. You know what? I'll put all the prototype logos up there, too.
Oh, dear Lord. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. No, just leave them both up there.
I will.
That way, if people like it, they can buy it.
Yep. All right. And then next week, we are actually getting to see Justice League early.
Yes.
Funny enough. And then we are visiting... a grail of a toy store. Shout out. We're going out to Kokomo Toys in Kokomo, Indiana. I'm going to bring a microphone and record some of the road trip, I think, if everyone's okay with that.
You can record your reactions when you walk in there.
Well, and then I'm going to talk about it. And then we'll talk about that in Justice League. We'll talk about our road trip when we get back. But yeah. All right.
Have a good one.
Bye.
The Infamous Podcast is recorded in Kings Mills, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati. You can find new episodes every Friday on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, our website, or anywhere podcasts are downloaded. This show is hosted by Johnny Podorf and me, Brian Tudor. Those amazing banners that go with our show notes, those are designed by Johnny, and the show is mixed and engineered by me. Our intro music is Moose from bensounds.com. You can find more information about the show online at infamouspodcast.com or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Infamous Podcast. To stay up to date on the latest news about the show and find out what's going on in the world of comics, movies, TV, and more. We also have a Patreon page, patreon.com/infamouspodcast. We have some great rewards for our patrons, and what we're looking for is help to grow the show to keep bringing you more of the content you want to hear. You can find Johnny on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as @JohnnyPodorf, and I'm on most social networks as @BrianTudor. So whenever you're listening to us, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. later.